Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, listeners. This is Windy. I just wanted to give a little warning that there is some bad language in this episode. We do drop the C-bomb.
React in a positive way. We need positivity for this second half. Positivity, believe, positivity, believe. 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 Positivity, believe, positivity, believe.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name is Windy. I'm joined by my psychic and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy and Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Hello, Windy.
This is the ninth in our series of All or Nothing watch-along specials. It's been a slog. Been a proper, grueling slog of Mondays. If you haven't watched episode 9, but you intend to, do stop listening now, because we're going to spoil that whole episode here. Hopefully, we can be a nice commentary for those who have listened and want some additional content. And if you've got no intention of signing up for Amazon and watching it, then we'll talk you through what you've missed. This episode is called The Run-In. The blurb for this one is, with the season restarted, Spurs have 8 games to secure European football next season. Jose Mourinho must navigate some tough fixtures, including the North London derby against Arsenal. The pressure tells as Hugo Lloris and Heung-min Son have an on-pitch altercation. As the longest season in their history draws to a close, Spurs look to the future and say goodbye to two long-serving squad members. And we believe that this episode covers the time period from a couple of days maybe before the West Ham match, so I think maybe the 21st of June, until sometime post 26th of July, which was the date of the Palace game. So it starts with the players entering the briefing room pre-West Ham, and Mourinho says, "There are a few qualities that without them you just can't win. The one that takes more time to develop, which is the psychological profile, that collective state of mind. I think that is something that they really need to improve." He talks about defensive principles, but says that they need to do what he's telling them they've done previously, 20 metres higher up the pitch. And he says of West Ham, they are very defensive, so it's a difficult match. And then the credits roll. We're back at the training ground, and there's some kind of game of, I think, tennis or football tennis or something. And Mourinho is absolutely loving it. He's joining in and having a bit of banter with players. He talks in the voiceover about having a responsibility to the fans and to the club. We find out there are 8 matches to go. We're in 8th position, 4 points off 5th. 23rd of June, West Ham game, and Mourinho is on the touchline shouting, "It's too flat, this shit." Basically, there's not enough happening on the pitch.
There's not enough peaked shit. It's all flat shit. Cow pats across.
You couldn't have put it better myself. Son opens the scoring, but is VAR'd for offside. I remember that moment very well. And we go in at half-time, 0-0. And Jose says, "If any of you feels a little bit of fatigue, you had 3 days rest. They had 2 days to rest. You need a little bit of pressure to be better, or sorry, if you need a little bit of pressure to be better, I give you an honest little bit of pressure. I think if we don't win the game, it's over. And by that he means our chance of European qualification. He says you have to give more, missing shit passes, fucking sloppy, fucking slow, pass back when the pass should be in front. And then he does this weird little sing-songy thing that I tried to mimic at the start of the episode. This felt like a proper dressing down. What did you think, Nathan?
Yeah, it's interesting. So we talked, obviously, on the last episode about, like, so much of the first six episodes are positivity, belief. If things go wrong, you're confident, all of that kind of stuff. And here he's changing his tone a little bit, and he's decided that, okay, now is the time to get on their backs. Now is the time to say, like, let me make you super aware of the conditions, not you know, not just acknowledge them, but, like, focus in on them. I don't know, that's interesting. That he feels that is the right time.
Bardi, any thoughts from you on the Mourinho halftime bollocking?
I mean, it's quite a good bollocking, and it perfectly summed up that game. It was missing shit passes, which is a pretty funny way to put it, but it was the truth. And I think what resonated with me in that whole bit was you've got 7 more games after this, and if you lose today, those 7 games are going to be awful because playing. I mean, I can't imagine. I'm not a professional footballer, but I can't imagine. I guess it's like if you know your contract's ending, but you still got to get through 2 months of work. It's just like you're going to have to come here every day. Train, go through all of this, all the social distancing, everything else like that, for nothing, just wasting my time and wasting your time. So I think it was a pretty good angle to take, and you know, it kind of worked
for sure. We see Suchek's own goal from a corner and Kane's fantastic finish for 2-0 after a quick counter, and there's a celebratory atmosphere after the game, I felt. And then we see Alistair Gold ask about Tongi and Ndombele in the post-match press conference, and the way it's edited sort of seems like Ndombele is listening to that question and answer as well. The way the sound changes as it focuses in on Ndombele, who's like staring up at something, which could be a TV screen. It was certainly made to appear like he was listening in. I can't imagine that would have been the case. I can't imagine they'd be streaming the press conference into the room the players are in, but that's the way they kind of presented it. So that then kickstarts this whole section on Ndombele, and we get some background. So he's the most expensive signing in the club's history. He scored on his debut, and we find that he's developed a relationship with Moussa Sissoko, who says he's like my little brother. And Sissoko explains that when you're a player, you want to play every game, you try to enjoy, try to do your job. So when you're not being picked for the team, but only training, you can feel that something is missing, and it is, in his words, very painful. And for me, it was quite good to hear this verbalised. It's kind of what I've always assumed, that you can feel fully a part of the squad in some respects, but unless you're actually playing, you're not going to be like ingrained, and you're not going to give your all, and you're not going to be a part of it truly. Pochettino had this thing, you don't come to the club to play, you come to the club to train and you prove yourself. But the psychology of that in terms of the elite sportsman is that it's very difficult to fully commit until you're actually in the team. You have to be some kind of driven person to do that. And what do you think, Buddy?
I mean, I'm glad we finally went there with Ndombele. I was concerned that we would go the whole season without touching on it and mentioning it. And when they were talking about Lo Celso in the previous episode, so we did, all of us referred to Ndombele as player A that shall not be named. So it was good to see that. And even if perhaps it was a little bit forced, the whole Aurier Sissoko Ndombele moment where they were together, it was good to see that side of him and of their relationship.
As much as, like, it's not completely unreasonable to simplify Ndombele's season as a failure, it's very incomplete. Like, obviously a lot of things went wrong, but, like, a large story of the season, and one that's so, like, hilariously glossed over in this documentary, is the number of times that Ndombele comes onto the pitch at 60 minutes and changes, you know, where it looks like Mourinho at halftime has said, try harder, where's your balls, and then we win in the second half. What's actually happened is Ndombele has come onto the pitch and give us creativity and the ability to move the ball from defence to attack. Yes, Ndombele failed this season. He had a very bad season. He underperformed. He certainly underperformed an enormous price tag. But, like, the talent was there, and he was far from, like, with zero impact. You know?
I mean, I don't even think I would say they failed. I think it's a not untypical first season in the Premier League for a foreign, young, very very young 22-year-old foreign player come into play here for the first time. And he's had some good moments. He's like, he had at the start of the year, he had some good game. And then there have been some bad games, for sure. There have definitely been some bad performances. And the problem has been the injuries and the long periods of time out of the team. That's been the issue, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're being very kind. I totally understand what you're saying, but I think you are being very kind there. Had Ndombele been purchased as a £20 million unknown, then this was a solid average season. But he wasn't. He was signed to be the linchpin of our midfield, to change our midfield, and it hasn't worked. And there's plenty of factors which we'll get into later when they have the whole meeting, but it still goes down as a failure.
So we see this section that Bardi referred to, where Sissoko, Aurier and Ndombele are hanging out together, and Aurier asks Ndombele how his first season has been, and he says it's a season of adaptation. He said it's complicated changing country, it's not easy when you change environment, the training, it's a change in intensity and even the matches. It hasn't been easy so far, but that's how it is. And they're all pretty, I think, philosophical and rational about it all. There's no drama there, there's no sort of panicking. And Sissoko says that Tongi will bring us to the Champions League next year, we believe in him. So he's got the support and backing of two of his teammates there. We then have this, I mean, I won't preempt it. We have this scene where Daniel Levy calls a meeting with Ndombele to discuss his lack of playing time. So immediately, I mean, that's quite unusual that the chairman is, we're seeing the chairman speak to a player. We're introduced to Roberto Balbontin, who's a player liaison officer. He's joining them. We find out he speaks four languages and he's there to help players settle in. He explains that normally it takes 6 to 8 months for players to settle, but everyone's different. And we see Levy kind of arrive to the meeting a bit late, and he asks Ndombele straight out what's not working. So just slightly in like a pretty odd start. I'd love to have known the conversation that set the meeting up. Ndombele says for 3 months he trained hard. Everyone said he trained well, but if I don't play, it means there must be something else. Levy explains that lots of players in their first season found it difficult. It's normal. He explains Soko's journey. He says that Musa is a fighter and he wasn't going to leave. And we get this line from Ndombele: I'm not concentrating as I should be, I'm not 100%. And Levy tells this story about how when he was 16 and at school, the head teacher told him to leave school, and Levy went home and he told himself that he wouldn't be beaten. He got an A in his exams and went to university. And Tonga is like, well, I'm a fighter too, I wouldn't be here if I wasn't a fighter. And Levy says the club and the manager believe he has talent, but he needs to unlock it. I have to say, this whole section really reminded me of the one time I got called to the headmaster's office. I hastened to add that it was for something that wasn't my fault, but I felt very guilty and very like overseen and under scrutiny, and it was quite intimidating. And what did you think, Bardi? What did you think of this rather bizarre scene?
I mean, this whole scene was amazing and not in a good way. And the fact that Levy was involved, and it was kind of chaired in this weird, it looked like a classroom. It was all, everything about this was wrong, and everything about this was like a guy who's being brought in front of his department head with HR there present in the room. It looked like a consultation meeting for someone being made redundant. Mm-hmm. And when Levy started talking about his childhood experiences, I'm like, this isn't about you, Daniel. Shut up and stop trying to relate your childhood experiences in Essex with a chap from France with African roots and everything else. It doesn't relate here. And it's like Levy just putting himself once again in the middle. But from all my kind of opinions over this, I got this overwhelming feeling that Ndombele is just this child, this kid, who's been thrown into a situation which is so difficult, and in a situation where everything is so reactive and so quick. And there are more to him. And I said after episode one that I think I need to change how I talk about these Tottenham players, that they are human beings and there's so much going on and there's so many things that can affect them. And it's up to us as fans, I think, not to throw players under the bus. But I also think there's a huge amount that Jose needs to be held responsible for, that he shouldn't be throwing players under the bus either. And I think some of the stuff that how they've treated Ndombele and allowed this conversation to keep happening, they're very responsible.
The scene is so bizarre. It's so fucking weird. It could have been held in the Black Lodge in Twin Peaks. It's just, it's like, it's such like a, like a theatrical performance. It really feels like Amazon have said to Levy, oh, we're thinking of doing this scene that will like make this would be a really good idea if you wanted to calm the fans down over the Ndombele section, because what we need is something to really knit together the narrative with him. And if we could get a translator in and we could perform this scene, I've prepared a script for you, by the way, and you know, it's so for the camera, and I'm not like, there is a part of me that is glad for it. Like I am also the idiot that falls for it, because I am glad to see that there's like an acknowledgement of Ndombele's talents, an acknowledgement of Ndombele's difficulty or struggle, of the patience displayed by the chairman. But I'm also aware that they are putting that on for my for calming me down. I am being sedated by the screen.
So there are a couple of other things that I think it's worth just touching on. Firstly, the fact that Ndombele is meeting with Levy without any of his agent, entourage, whatever, there.
Yeah.
It kind of implies that something else has happened first, right? There have been stages here that we are not seeing. You don't just immediately see a player who's 22 meeting with the club chairman. That is highly irregular. You know, with Eriksen, it was a bit different because they're talking about transfer, they're talking about his future, and Mourinho's there. With in this instance, Mourinho's totally excluded, so it makes you wonder if something's happened in the lead up to this. I'd love to have seen whether there was a meeting between Ndombele and Mourinho first. I'd love to have had that insight. I'm sad we haven't seen that part of the story, but something has happened for this meeting to take place.
It's very much an escalation, you're right. There's very much, even Danny Rose went to see Mourinho and said, now I'm going to go see Daniel Levy. So yeah, there's definitely been a few steps that have been missed here.
I strongly agree with Bardi that Levy is utterly clueless in terms of his lack of self-awareness in comparing the two of them. I mean, Christ, it's just, that's embarrassing. The person that comes out of it quite well is Roberto, who is, I assume, completely off the cuff, adding in some very supportive and encouraging words when he's doing the translations to try and soften what Levy's saying to Ndombele. It's a fascinating scene, but also quite an uncomfortable scene. I think, unlike what Nathan's saying, where, you know, it feels like Amazon have literally asked for this meeting to happen. Perhaps what happened was, let's say, Mourinho and Levy are in a meeting, and Levy says, I think I'm going to have to meet with Tongi, aren't I? And Amazon have gone, could we get in on that? Can we see that meeting happen? Maybe that's the background. I don't know. I like Roberto, though. He seemed very, very cool, very easy to get along with, very supportive. He came off well.
Levy needs to stop having ideas and making decisions. I think everything, the more I watch this man, I preferred it when he never spoke. That's the point I'm getting to with this guy.
He's a complete control freak. Let it go, Daniel. There are layers between you and this player that need to be respected.
He's an idiot.
We get a bit of insight from Roberto about Sissoko, who says that he's one of the kindest players I work with, which I thought was really lovely. And then we get more press conference questions about Ndombele, so it's hammering home the fact that he's at the forefront of everyone's minds at this point. And that, of course, is because there's all these stories during lockdown of how Mourinho's broken protocols to go and train him, and then ultimately, once again, back on the bench and not playing, not even being brought on for minutes in the previous match. It's the 2nd of July now. We see Spurs playing Sheffield United away. It's 1-0 at half time, Mourinho is livid about the VAR goal that Kane scored for the Lucas handball, which is more of a problem with the handball rules than it is with VAR, but furious with the video assistant referee. He tells the team once again they have to defend. Soon after half time, it's 2-0. And Ndombele comes on and we do one. Mourinho is furious about the disallowed goal, but he says they had enough time to psychologically react in a different way. We then see him in his office with a coach, and the coach says the attitude was really bad. And Mourinho responds, every day I learn more about my players. I'm very demanding. I try to push players to their limits, and I like to feed that internal competition. We then have this scene where I'm so fascinated to get your thoughts on this whole bit. He sets up an 11 against 11 match.
Yeah.
It looks like an incredible incredibly feisty game, spiky game, where there are sort of lots of minor injuries and hard tackle. And we see that Son has been the recipient of a very hard tackle from Eric Dier and needs treatment. And then we see this argument between Lucas and Serge Aurier, and Lucas is saying, every day you speak a lot, every day you speak a lot, and they're getting really quite aggro with one another, which I'm sure is like a constant, that must be a constant thing in training, that players will backbite and have a little bit of a pop at one another. But it's quite shocking. Like, I wasn't expecting to see that. The staff inside speculate that Mourinho has set this up, and that's the narrative that's presented here. They say, to get a bit of nastiness in them for tomorrow. The narrative is that Mourinho is trying to get the players to bite back each other and to push each other psychologically and emotionally to be nastier, to have this develop a mean streak and become more competitive. We see Son, who's got ice on his ankle with bruising developing. He looks absolutely gutted, worried. He's just come back from injury. He's worried about having another injury. We hear Mourinho say, to develop a team, to develop a style of play, to develop even a mentality, we need to use the difficult moments to push each other, to blame each other, to have confrontation. It can happen, and I like it to happen. We see Dier go to apologise to Son, and Son's just like, I don't get it. Like, imagine I broke my shin. And then Mourinho's kind of laughing about it, saying, you know, you should Instagram it. You should take a photo and put it on Instagram. Son's like, I'm so angry, I swear. And he's got this like quite deep gash on his shin, and not a deep gash, but a scratch on his shin and deep bruising. The bruising's appearing already. Buddy, what did you think of this whole thing? To me, this was really unexpected and quite bizarre. I wouldn't have thought this would happen in a professional football club. But what did you think? Is this normal? Is this okay?
I mean, I have no idea if 11 versus 11 is a thing. I think they used to do it back in the day. They would play it. So I'm not sure what they do now. The Lucas versus Serge thing is very interesting. I'm quite curious to see who you would jump in for, Windy. Who would you support?
That's a really good point. Whoever wasn't being the dick in training, I guess.
Okay, so I thought that was interesting. Lucas is very much, you know, he toes the party line, whereas Serge isn't. So it's interesting that he's got called out. The Dier Son thing, I thought Son reacted quite badly to it, but I think Dyer's probably gone in a bit too hard. And Sonny did need to, I'm going to hate myself for saying this, but he does need to suck it up and just get on with it. Those things do happen, but I can understand why he's upset about it. But it is weird, but we needed to see this in the context of what happens further down the line about the whole challenging each other. I did think that post Sheffield United, it was the most depressed I'd heard Mourinho talking about Tottenham. So he wanted to see a spark of some sorts, and in his way, this is how best to do it.
Nathan, any thoughts?
Do you two accept the narrative in this scene that this is a deliberate creation of Mourinho to the coach used? Get a bit of nastiness in them tomorrow. Do you believe that narrative?
Part of me does. I mean, part of me does believe it. It's probably, we saw earlier in one of the episodes that he created a little, not a confrontation, but he created a competition to get a to spark something. So I think he probably did do this. I think he's been around long enough football. He's been around football long enough to know that these professional athletes, get them fighting each other, get them angry, then maybe you get a reaction. I think he probably did plan for something.
And we've seen him say that he liked the previous confrontation between Dier and Dele.
Well, that's two people arguing out over loss, and what, you know, that's a demonstration of players caring about things. That's not setting up a situation in which you're happy that Dier has like crumpled Son and giving him a minor injury, and Aurea and Lucas have like had a fisticuffs event. You know, I just find that crazy, man. I think that's wild.
It's very reckless. Very reckless. I think it's a dangerous thing to set up. But I get the impression he has used this tactic before. I do get the impression it's something that he will turn to when it's one of his playbook.
I suppose the thing is, I mean, it could be narrative driven from the show. It could be. But when you set up an 11-a-side match, what do you think's going to happen? You're like, you're putting players at risk, aren't you, of injury? You're saying, I want you to have an actual match and compete. Otherwise, what's the point?
I mean, this weekend in real life, we saw Ceballos go in on another Arsenal player. I can't remember who it was.
Yeah.
So we know these situations do happen. That was just a little game of Rondo. So I think footballers do probably niggle and get at each other more than we're led to believe.
Yeah, and Lucas is, the wording with Aurier is like, you're always talking in training. Kind of implies that there's some ongoing, unresolved beef there. And I guess guess the fact that the coaching staff or medical staff, whoever they were, who were watching through the window, I mean, it just seemed so obvious to them that this is what was happening. There was no question. They just stated it as fact, pretty much. I don't know. I'm willing to accept either side of that argument. I found this odd. And what it kicks off then is the match against Everton.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We go ahead through the deflected goal from Keane. And just before half time, there's a moment where Son appears to give up, or he does give up on a bit of tracking back. And Hugo Lloris goes absolutely ballistic. He runs over to Son as they're going in for their half time team talk, and he starts pushing him. And he goes mad in the changing room. He says, "There's 1 minute to go, and it nearly costs us a goal." He's screaming, "Make the run for the team." And you've got like people having to intervene and hold Lloris back. Toby calming suddenly down. And Mourinho says, "This wouldn't have happened a year ago. It happened now because we demand more of one another." And he ends with, "For me, it's perfect." So does that make you think, Nathan, that the previous 11 versus 11 has more chance of being a deliberate ploy?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, I was going to say the same. I thought the way Jose handled the Son Hugo thing was good, solid man management, and it makes me believe that the confrontation that Nathan asked was probably set up. That's what he wanted, because I thought he handled it really well, and it's one of the better moments of Jose man management. So I think he's been there before, and he knew what to expect. Maybe perhaps not Son and Hugo, but he thought something like that would happen.
I think all of like the. Not being good guys, being cunt, this whole section here with the 11v11, the encouraging them to scream and shout at each other is this one continuous collective thing where, like, this is like his main focus. And like what we saw in terms of results during the post-lockdown period of time was like it worked and it was functional. But I just think that mentality where, okay, players make fewer mistakes through fear, and yes, the responsibility element, like, I'm very happy with, and obviously that was needed this season. Obviously there was a huge lack of players being responsible for their own actions, but I just don't think that this makes sense as a way of breeding that responsibility. I think there's the creation of this negative atmosphere, and I don't think it lends itself to good football, and I don't think it lends itself to great results. I mean, Mourinho has had great results historically, but I don't know, man. I don't know if that's that valid anymore.
So in the match itself, we beat Everton 1-0. It's this sort of celebratory atmosphere once again in the dressing room. Dyer is swinging his shirt around. We then see this clip of Davis and Son together. Son says he's not someone to fight. He has a huge amount of respect for Lloris as a player, as a captain, and typically, sweetly, Son says, as a human. And he says, "We're like more than family," with how much they see each other. And Davis talks about taking pride in winning scrappy games, which feels like it might be parroted a little bit, possibly. I don't know. We draw 0-0 with Bournemouth. That is glossed over. I wonder why.
Probably one of the most boring games of football, like the most dull, dire, dross, more words beginning with D thing I've ever seen in my fucking life.
I quite liked how Tom Hardy's spin on it, that they follow this up with another clean sheet. I thought... I thought, Jesus. And then I remembered, oh no, we drew 0-0 and it was awful. But yeah, I did like his spin.
Yeah, that game was really not good. Mourinho is speaking to Matt Law then in the sort of virtual press conference, and Law says that the fans are angry, and we were angry post Bournemouth. We were very angry as a fan base. Can Mourinho give the fans any optimism? He says the message is simple. Nobody in this club is happy. And he talks through everything that's happened post Champions League final, reading off all the reasons why things haven't gone perfectly well. So then we're moving into the pre-Arsenal segment. We have Harry Kane saying it's an important match for the fans. We have randomly some other people brought in to talk about it. Harry Redknapp, Ledley King. We see a montage of Kane goals. We're in the briefing room and Mourinho talks to the players about how to handle derby matches. He tells them they have to understand the game, feel the game. He tells them to fight.
Just want to say, before we get into the Arsenal section, there's like a major, major narrative, at least from my perspective, that the documentary glosses over here. They mention, like you just mentioned, Kane's goals. But like, for me, the biggest part of this point in the season was, wow, Kane is back. Kane is flying. Kane is scoring. Kane's looking athletic. And there's no mention of that at all. I was so happy about that at this period of time. That was the big thing for me. And it's just, I guess it's implied that Kane was just fine and scoring and brilliant the whole time.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Lacazette opens the scoring with bang goal. I mean, there's that goal is insane. No back. But then very quickly, Son robs Luiz and makes it 1-1, which is just fantastic. Lovely little dink finish. Mourinho says, stay with the game. Feel the right moment to go. We need to force more the run. Alderweireld scores the header from the corner to win it. And the point, I think, here is that fans are going crazy at home. You know, they're watching on TV. They're communicating to the club via Zoom, and it's just such a shame that this like really enjoyable 2-1 victory over our local rivals is happening behind closed doors. But nonetheless, there's jubilant dressing room scenes once again. Lucas is dancing, but quite quickly we quite move on quite quickly from Arsenal, I would say. Bardi, what did you think?
Yeah, I think we could have done with maybe at least a couple minutes more. It's a big game. It was an important game. A lot of Spurs fans would have been looking forward to the behind the scenes stuff here, but it was kind of skipped over. The strange thing is, those NFL changing rooms, they're cavernous. They are insane how big they are, and I think it does harm the perhaps the atmosphere as well of watching the players celebrate. That they're not on top of each other, they're so spaced out, which I guess is the whole reason for it.
So we move on to Japhet Tanganga signing a 5-year contract, and we meet his father Leon, who's wearing a very natty waistcoat.
Hell yeah,
what a guy.
And that whole bit is, you know, it's really nice. Tanganga's lovely and his family lovely, so it's really
got such
nice.
A good smile, Tanganga. It's got such a warm smile. I love his smile.
He seems completely authentic, just lovable man. Hitchin said that he's very excited about Tanganga. The club are excited about him, and he says hopefully we'll add 2 or 3 new players, maybe even more in the summer, and specifies that Mourinho has 3 to 4 positions we want to improve on. He says we've always got to look further down the line rather than today as a sort of difference between us, other clubs at our level. Then we see the players hearing that City haven't got a ban and that we need to finish sit and we need to win the last 3 games. And at this point, there's only 16 minutes left of the series for these last 3 matches. And I'm thinking, how's this going to happen? You know, we've gone match by match pretty much with a couple of omissions, and they've suddenly got 3 to deliver in a quarter of an hour. Anyway, Newcastle are dispatched relatively easily, and we find out that Kane has passed 200. There's a short bit of talking to camera from Kane about that. And then we see Kane's family, his partner and his 2 daughters, as they're doing this whole gender reveal thing of the baby that's being expected. I could have done without this, to be honest, Bardi. What did you think?
Yeah, that, we totally skipped over it, although it did give me my favourite line of the whole thing. It was the little girl going to Kane. Now, do a little girl. I did quite like it. He's good, but he's not that good.
Goal, Kane.
Yeah, do a goal. And he hit it first time as well.
Well, did he?
We don't know.
No, he did. He did. We don't have him. That one I accept completely as reality.
But I think we did. I would like to have known a little bit more about the Newcastle game, but I'm going to sound like a proper boomer now. But the amount of mobile phones show, it's like they're all getting their massages, and Lo Celso breaks news first, Spanish to Lamella, and then it kind of gets out. And then the shot of the changing room in Newcastle, they're all on their mobile phones. Like, it would never work if I was a football manager. Put your phones away while you're at work. I wouldn't last a day. They would get rid of me. But it's just like the whole kind of these footballers, I guess it's real life. It's like normal life as well. We're just there as a group, but then they're just away because they're all hidden in their phone. Quite sad to see it's happened. And I am sounding like a boomer.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
Totally.
Just to be on the record, yes, you are. And also to be on the record, gender reveals are immensely lame, but...
Yeah, really naff. That whole thing, it was so weird that they chose that to go in. Like, all the things they could have shown in this documentary,
they could have talked about Kane's 200 goal, yeah. Yeah.
Madness. Anyway.
I mean, Kane's 200 goals is quite a landmark. Let's have a... Have we had a bit of Kane in depth on Kane? I don't know. Maybe
his stories. Bits and bobs, but not much. I mean, a bit of talking through some of his best moments, his Spurs upbringing as such might have been good, but nope.
Nope.
We then see, well, we whittle through the Leicester game.
Which is a huge result, which is a result against a Leicester team who all season have been like, oh, they're like new Spurs. They are new Spurs. And then they come to White Hart Lane and we pump
them 3-0.
Yeah.
This might be our strongest run of three games in the entire season. We saw out the season in a clutch manager.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, and by the way, we won three games.
Yeah. Mm. However, what is important in the eyes of the documentary makers.
Fuck me.
The Skywalk! It's Skywalk time, baby. So we see Levy and Mourinho both being a bit scared of heights. Really dull, really pointless. It's literally one big advert.
Sometimes you're watching TV during a commercial break and this an advert will come on and you'll be like, maybe it's more of an arty one. It's like and they tend to be car or perfume adverts, and you're going, what the hell is this advertising? This is a woman in a silver dress walking down a silver hallway talking about some sort of obscure concepts. What are they advertising here? And then, oh, okay, no, okay, it was an advert for the new Mercedes. Okay, I get it now. And it can take quite a while to understand what the advert is, but it's never taken me 9 hours to realise that something was an advert for the fucking Skywalk.
The whole, I'm just so tired. I'm tired. It's nine hours of football, 9 hours of showtime, and I don't need more Jose and Daniel Levy old man banter up a Skywalk. Yeah, it's not even that scary. Come on, you're strapped in.
That's the thing. Like, if this was a genuinely exciting tourist attraction which we'd developed a stadium, I'd be a bit like, yeah, do you know what? Why not? But it's not that great. It's just a high vantage point. That's it. There's many of those in London.
It's just like walking over the O2 arena. It's just like, it's not even dangerous, for God's sake. There's more dangerous things at Go Ape where you go down a zip line. This is ridiculous. And the amount of time that social media, I mean, the amount of time that, look at us, we're doing it. We're talking about Skyline.
We're doing what they want. It's really annoying. So, let's
I'm
stop.
Not gonna say
let's
another word about it. Done.
So it's Palace, the final game of the season. Kane scores a lovely goal, puts one up. At half time, Mourinho announces that Chelsea are winning, that Chelsea are winning. It's good news for Spurs. Mourinho says we're defending quite well, but we need to control the game. We see Jeff Schlupp equalise, and then we basically see the end of the game, and Mourinho and his coaching staff are celebrating this incredible achievement, and he's like, I never imagined myself celebrating finishing sixth.
Spurs gets everybody. It gets you. He's like, Mourinho's celebrating sixth. He would have been taking the mick out of Wenger for this years and years and years ago. He's worse than Wenger, because at least Wenger was top, they were celebrating top four.
He's become everything he hated.
Yes.
Celebrating mediocrity. So then we're taken to the end of season barbecue, and Levy gets on the mic. It's really awkward again. It's a bit like the Christmas party bit. He's just not at his best when he's in front of a crowd. He really does lack charisma. But he explains it's been a difficult season on and off the pitch. He sort of introduces the fact that Michel Vorm and Jan Vertonghen will be leaving. He brings them up and he says, you've been a credit to the club and you're always welcome back. And he's got them gifts. He's got them watches. Mm. And he's like, and we'll probably get them engraved. Why didn't you engrave the watches?
And we'll get them
engraved. It's so weird that they haven't just engraved the watches. Have they arrived late? It's like, has their delivery been delayed or something? It's so odd.
Makes sense why we keep buying wingers instead of defensive midfielders, because it doesn't know how to buy anything. He can't even go... He can't even buy a leaving present for Jan Vertonghen. Buy a watch, fine. Engrave it, good service. But he can't even do that. This is the guy. This guy is running our club.
He needs a personal chauffeur.
He does. This is the thing. It comes off as a sort of really like last minute gesture. He suddenly thought, oh, I guess we could get the watch.
Which is probably sponsored. The amount of watch time that Mourinho and Levy have given this thing, we're always flashing their watches. It's probably free anyway.
Whereas on the other hand, the player players have been really organised, and they've sorted out like a photoshopped picture of Vertonghen with the Supian thing, and they've all signed the what do you call that, mounting, I suppose, around the picture, around the photo in the frame. And that is a genuinely lovely gesture, which Vertonghen, you can tell, really appreciates. And he gives a very heartwarming speech where he says, "You guys mean so much to me. I know for sure I'll never find a team like this again." And he's a complete natural on the mic. Jan, he just seems like a warm, genuine person who is a very good public speaker, and it goes down really well. I've thoroughly enjoyed seeing that little send-off. Vertonghen says that he watches 5 games a season, but that he'll watch every Spurs game.
So heartwarming, man. Such a good line. So sweet to hear that from Jan Vertonghen. I love that.
It's perfect. It's the perfect end for Jan. The last section is Mourinho talking about these months having been important for the future, and he says, "We have to try to win a title, and next season it is going to be done." And that is the end of episode 9 of the documentary. What did we think, Bardi, of this episode?
I mean, we finally got to see a bit about Ndombele, which is what we wanted, but there wasn't much else to it. I think we skipped over the bits that I would have found the most interesting. I would like to have done a little bit more in the North London Derby. I think in a season of very few highs, that was a definite high, and I didn't like the way it was skipped over. I think we could have done a little bit more around it. But to be honest, by the time when Levy picked up the mic at the leaving deal, I was quite happy for this to be the final few minutes of the show.
How about you, Nath?
Yeah, Bardi's said everything that I had to say.
Yeah, I must admit, I have really enjoyed these 3 consecutive Mondays of watching the show and recording with you guys until today. Today was a slog. It was a proper slog to get through. I've kind of become quite disillusioned with the documentary, and it hasn't quite delivered on what I hoped for. And I found the 3 final episodes, 3 of the weakest series. We'll talk about the documentary series as a whole, I think, briefly before we go. Let's start off with a question from Chooks, who is one of our patrons, one of our ex-subs. Chooks says, "Do you think that the fact of being filmed changed our season? It must be weird as a player to have cameras hovering constantly, and at key moments, it must have been tempting for execs to make big decisions with one eye on narrative, etc." He also says, "If Amazon came to us and said, let's do season 2, would you and should we?" Nathan, what do you think? Do you think the documentary in any way changed our season?
I don't think we made any out of character decisions as a club, to be fair. I can definitely understand how being in front of the camera might change minor behaviours. Mm-hmm. I can even understand how it could change, yeah, major decisions, but I can't spot any. I can't think, unless literally Ndombele was going to leave this summer, except that they posed a scene where Levy talks to him and that resolved the issue, which would be great, in which case I'm glad for the existence of the documentary. But other than that, I can't really think of what possibly could have changed as a result of the cameras being around.
So some people have hinted that perhaps one of the reasons we got Jose Mourinho in as our coach is because he's box office, because he's so charismatic that he was the man to get us through this documentary. I can't see that. I think
Levy hired Jose Mourinho because Levy thinks Jose Mourinho is a really good manager,
one of the 2 best managers in the world,
top 2.
Buddy, how about you? Do you think it's changed anything?
No, I think they did so much filming, they could pretty much have shaped this however they wanted and the fact that they skipped over the furlough bit, they skipped over Delhi, shows that they could have taken this documentary wherever they wanted, but they did what was best for Spurs, and I don't think Spurs actually changed. I don't think Spurs changed anything because the cameras were there.
And what about Series 2? Would you want the Series 2, Bardi?
No, thank you.
You're done with it now. I think we do need to sort of just comment on where we are with the documentary as a whole. I'm happy to start. I think for the first 3 episodes, it was really novel and really interesting. And there were some nice little stories of, you know, what's happening off the pitch, some of the interactions between players. It was really fun to see them, how they behave off camera, on camera, but off camera, as in outside of press conferences and outside of social media. And I still, throughout the whole thing, I did enjoy seeing those snippets, and I did enjoy the interactions in the canteen and, you know, in the dressing room after the match, that kind of thing. But what became very clear to me is this is neither a truthful narrative of the story of a team season, because it just wasn't that. We're touching it in all of the episodes that the narrative is formed in a way that is not authentic and genuine. But neither is it a deep dive into some of the interesting points that go alongside some of the context here. And I feel like the producers, I completely get that this is a very surface level documentary, very sort of propaganda heavy, not just in terms of the club, but in terms of the Premier League as a whole. And it suits everyone to deliver it in this way. But I definitely feel like as a documentarian, I wonder whether the director and the producers would love to have done a bit more of a deep dive, gone and spoken to some local residents about certain key issues, perhaps not the furloughing of staff, because that is highly controversial and political. But like Bardi mentioned, maybe the Tottenham riots or the impact that the stadiums had on local residents. Things like this, they would have been quite easy to address in the show. And I don't feel that we got much insight there. Like I said in this episode, it was quite odd that we suddenly saw Harry Redknapp and Ledley King brought in to discuss the Arsenal game from out of nowhere. And the reason that was odd is because it wasn't done elsewhere. I mean, if that had been done throughout the show around many of the key subjects, then I think that would have worked quite well to have different voices. I've seen that before. You know, the Michael Jordan documentary did that regularly, and it was really useful to add additional context, particularly from journalists who were around at the time and were able to sort of analyse the situation. And I think that's it. There's a real lack of sort of critical thinking around this. There was no sort of evaluation or anything other than a very surface level look at what was going on. And that's left me feeling a bit empty about the whole thing. Sorry, that's quite a long-winded answer. Nathan, how about for you? What have you got from this? Has it delivered on any level for you?
There are moments in here that I really appreciate, mainly moments with the players. I've learned a bit about some of the non-playing staff at the club, for better or worse. I sort of have a better grasp on who Levy and maybe even who Mourinho is as a person. But, and I know that you, Chris, want this to be quite timeless and you want this to be about the football that was played at the time. But the reality is, and what has affected my viewing of especially these final three episodes, is that we have just lost, been absolutely outplayed at our home to Everton. This is a documentary about what a brilliant, charismatic genius Jose Mourinho is, when in real life I am increasingly comfortable with the suspicion that he is an arrogant, outdated cunt. An intelligent cunt he may be, but a cunt nonetheless.
Well, for me, the show, just like the audio clips they used to contextualize the big moments, shows that this really was never a show for understanding what Tottenham is, what Tottenham means, and what it means to actually change and rebuild a club.
Yeah.
This show should have been about restructuring, for lack of a better word, a dynasty, you know, about trying to change from one manager to a new manager, to change a football philosophy, getting through the protests, getting through COVID. Instead, all we got was vanilla clip audio sound bites, some talk about balls and some insight into fist bump. Had it not been for Son, Davies, Dyer, Tanganga, and these actual really nice, smart human beings trying to adapt to a new manager and a new way of football, it would have been 100% white noise, which just for me, all that does is pander towards the armchair, popcorn munching, clout chasing masses. Football is many things, but for me, it's not Daniel Levy kind of eating granola in a canteen or doing some lads banter on top of a stadium. I want to know what Daniel Levy's doing, what Hitchin's doing. I want to try and find something about Tottenham without the propaganda being constantly rammed into me. I was never not going to watch this show, but I can confidently say I've never rewatched. This wasn't my Spurs, and this wasn't an image of Spurs I wanted to see. I have to admit, when the show came out, I was heartbroken to know that after all the hours and effort and work we put into talking about Tottenham and how passionate we feel about Tottenham, there wasn't one bit in everything we did that we could sum up what our fan base was feeling. I love Spurs, and not to be associated Spurs in this way, I found it really hurtful, but after 9 hours of vanilla blancmange, I'm honestly thanking God we weren't associated with it. That honestly wasn't my Tottenham. I don't know quite what my Tottenham is or what my vision of Tottenham is, but I know 100% that wasn't it, and I'm happy to diss myself away from getting binned.
Hear, hear, well said, Bardi. I mean, the thing is, we've seen Sunderland Till I Die. We learnt about what the club meant to the community and what the community meant to the club. And it was perfect. It was not happy, but it was perfect. It was so beautifully presented, and we've seen none of that. We have such a rich history and also such a sort of local community bond that, mm-hmm. that just was completely glossed over. I mean, even something as simple as let's go home with Japhet Tanganga. He's talking about his family this whole time. Let's spend 5 minutes in his house. Let's understand what his family has been like. Like, when did they arrive in the UK? Let's hear about how he's been brought up. Let's see some of his old haunts. There's all this stuff that would have been so much more enjoyable than like a 2-3-4 minute clip of Kane's gender reveal weirdness. You know, it's open goal missed after open goal missed, I think.
What's more Tottenham than that?
Well, yeah, that is my Tottenham.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud, D. Lindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.